Welcome back. This is Head Full of Hannibal, your Fannibal podcast from Baltimore, Maryland. I am Amy.
I'm Jen.
And we managed to get our acts together, get back in the same space to do a podcast.
What?
I know. This is our episode 25, where we will be covering season 2, episode 6 of Hannibal, Futamono, which is the mid-meal course in kaiseki of a small but robust soup or stew served in a lidded bowl.
Oh.
Yep. I guess in a way, like, because it's supposed to be a pottery bowl, you kind of get that roll over to the clay leg in the end.
Uh-huh. Or, you know, Miriam Lass is a small but robust soup in the well. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Which I started watching this, and halfway through, I was looking up some notes for something, and then it came on, like, the Hannibal Wiki and kind of read the whole synopsis. And I was like, there's a lot of shit in this episode. Like, yes. It went so many places in an hour or
it
40
did.
Minutes. So
it did.
We're going to get rolling also because Justin has a call time later today for Hitchcock the Water Ballet.
Yep.
Hitchcock the Water Ballet. He's doing sound production for Fluid Movement in Baltimore. So he has shows tonight. We're not eating anything today, and we're drinking beer. We're drinking Bell's Oberon Ale, American Wheat Ale, because later we're going to Clavel and we're going to eat really fucking amazing Sinaloan Mexican food and drink fabulous margaritas.
Yeah.
And that cheese dip.
That cheese dip is great. It's just melted cheese in a thing.
In a tiny cast iron pan, and it comes out blazingly hot. And then you can get chorizo or vegetable topping.
So
and it's delicious. And when you get to the end of it, the last bits are like all crispy burnt and they're so good. And I hate going there with people who are not people who finish stuff because I'm the one who's like, can I eat the end of it? Nobody seems to care about this. And I feel like I look like a complete weirdo.
Did they expand now?
They did.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, they expanded into the garage space next to them and they put a little 6-seat bar in there that's their mezcal tasting area, so you can book an hour mezcal tasting.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't think I'd do that. I think it would be wasted on me because I'm not super into the smokiness of mezcal. That's why I wasn't interested in doing a scotch tasting when we were in Scotland, because I'm like, I guess it'll be great. I mean, I'm sure it will be. But yeah.
Well, I feel like we're still on point with our drinks because having a cold beer is probably exactly what Miriam Lass wanted.
Yes, I know. Like,
beer me.
You know, like, as many as you can. Actually, that reminded me of talking about Clavel. Parts and Labor's closing.
Which, I saw your post on that.
No, which was a restaurant in Baltimore that was, they butchered their own meat and had a attached butcher shop. And so that was the focus of their food. Was whole animal preparation.
And we had plans to podcast there, but no more.
No. I mean, we definitely don't want to go this weekend because it's been mobbed.
Oh.
And they've already apparently had a lot of staff leave.
Wow.
So that's we're going to miss it. It was good.
Yeah.
We'd go for birthdays and stuff. So hopefully something cool comes in. If it does, we'll go eat there and we'll tell you all. I have a bunch of links to talk about. First off was an article from mid-June off the Science Enthusiast page about a guy who served his friends tacos made from his amputated foot.
Wait, did he tell people beforehand?
Yes. He was, I think, a motorcycle accident. Severely damaged one of his feet. And they were like, we can't reconstruct it. It should just be amputated. And he said, can I have it? And they said, sure.
Whoa.
And he thought about freeze-drying it or other things, and he brought it home, and he said it was kind of weird because him and his friends were, like, playing with it. Sorry. And then he worked with a friend. He's like, you know, there's always that question, if you could ethically eat human meat,
would you do it?
And, like, 10 of his friends were like, yeah.
Wow.
So they made fajita tacos.
Which makes sense because that's probably the best way to spread out that much meat among
not a lot of it
people.
Yeah. And he said it had a very strong beef flavor, but it was kind of tough. I would think your foot
would be tough. Yeah.
But that the flavor was good and everybody was like pretty cool with it. So I think he did. I think he was going to take a cast from it and like 3D print it into keychains or something. God. I can't quite remember. If you go, I'll put the link in our notes so people can go read it. But and warning, there is not a picture of his foot, but there is a picture of his, like, it's wrapped up in bandages, but post injury leg. So if you're squeamish, you might not want to go there. I found another cool fandom article, which was called The Power of Fandom from the Saturday Paper, which is Australian. And they were talking about the Australian National Library, which is trying to save 19th century scrapbooks that people kept about actors and actresses of the time. And the article is about how fandom is both critical and self-reflective. And the person who wrote it's talking as a fan. Mm-hmm. So it's cool because they're talking about this scrapbook of a woman who kept it for a couple of actors and, you know, how she was so into, like, getting all the articles about them and the pictures and, like, going to their shows and following them around, wow. You know, very much like people do now.
Yeah.
And a quote that I liked from it, because they were comparing that kind of fandom to now fandom. Mm-hmm. They said, similarly, there is an expert criticism that permeates online fan spaces. After all, who better to thoroughly read and interpret an artist's work than someone with an unfailingly comprehensive knowledge of it? The idea that all girls in the audience are interested romantically or sexually in the men on stage not only ignores the existence of queer fans, it also disregards their potential to engage with music on a complex or emotional level. This, I think they're particularly talking about One Direction fandom. Again, and maybe boy bands, but they sort of talk about fandom in general. And I was like, it really ties, like, all these articles. I've just had a lot of this stuff come around. So I was like, yes, you could be a super fan and still be smart about it. I know. I know. We look at real dumb. It drives me crazy. A couple fix and stuff. There was one called Astronomical Odds by X Zombie X Kitten X. Based on the joke, pitched up a hitchhiker last night. He said, thanks. How do you know I'm not a serial killer, though? I replied, the chance of two serial killers being in the same car are astronomical. So it's an AU. Will's a hitchhiking serial killer, scruffy guy, and Hannibal picks him up. And
oh my God.
They have sex in the car and then run into each other later.
Nice.
So, you know, how could this possibly happen?
Oh my gosh.
It's a short one, so it's funny. There was the Hannibet, a Hannibal. I don't know how you pronounce this. Is it supposed to be like an abecedarium or abecedarium? Which, what it is, it's set up like the Ghastly Crumb Tinies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was the... A is for Amy, who fell down the stairs. And the one that I particularly liked and is relevant to this section of Hannibal is K is for cats who's alive, shut your face. And it's illustrated. The illustrations are really great.
I think you sent me that one.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I saw that. Yeah.
That one was fun.
It's really cute.
But yeah, I liked the, I think it starts with A is for Abby, who had to die twice. I think it's the first one. So that was very cute. And another art, it's Beatrice Senius did art for a fairy tale AU that I saw through Emin Gary's Tumblr. So I'm going to link to that. It's like a cool, very like illustrated style. And it's this sort of like profile of Hannibal and this like earth, the kind of oranges and earth tones sort of looming with a tiny, very pale, like Will sort of elfin creature kissing him. And it was super cool. And I think you can get stuff on Redbubble.
Cool.
Stuff like that. I thought I reblogged it, but there'll be a link. Speaking of, Emin Gary did a recent fic called Taste, which is Taylor porn.
What?
Yeah.
I have not been reading anything lately. Mm. Oh, I have to.
My updated fic notifications in my email is like a wall of bolt type that I have not clicked to read. I've gotten so many notifications and I haven't checked anything recently.
I don't think I get notifications on much stuff, and that might be the problem. Mm.
I know. And then I keep seeing the Fresh Meat Fridays and I'm like, oh, look at all this other stuff. And then I don't read anything. Occasionally I try to read a real book, but I have two of them right now I'm not reading. But that was good. I can send you a link. It's not very long.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's a follow-up. Please. And the last thing I found, this is, I think this has been out for a couple years, but there's a Hannibal ASMR video that's just cooking.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Some of the knife sounds are a little too harsh for me. Mm-hmm. But some of the like sauteing and stuff like
the
that
sizzling.
Is.
Sizzling. Yeah.
Two thumbs up. I like ASMR stuff. Videos, though I actually haven't been listening to them lately because usually I want to listen like when I go to sleep and I don't like waking up with headphones on.
Yeah.
For some reason, it bothers me. I think that's everything I had as a lead-in. So we can go right into our episode this time. The harpsichord parts of this episode remind me. I have to find the meme. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's I think the second one in here when he's composing and looking incredibly satisfied and pleased with himself, except somebody put audio over it that's like blink, blark, blark,
blark, blark. Yeah, when that came up, I was like, oh, I can hear Amy giggling from here. Shredders.
What's that?
Shredders.
It was similar to the Shredders, yes. And I was...
it's like serious look.
It's the self-satisfied smirk. And I'm like, I should really find it and save it for days I need it.
Great. So that scene, I had two thoughts. The first one was, oh my God, Amy's probably laughing her ass off right now because of that meme. And then the second was, oh, this episode could totally be the musical episode. Not only because the whole thing is about him composing this overarching song about what's going on the entire time, which you could use as like a through line, but there's a lot going on in the episode. There's a lot of, you know, plot stuff and people interacting. And there's also a lot of just really moments of like the whole Chilton and Gideon scene. I was like, they're going to just burst out into some sort of Sondheim song in a minute.
Is it just because of what's his face who plays Chilton? Are you just having some like musical theater feels?
I think I was. Just like, I want to see this as musical theater.
It reminds me, I still haven't watched the Hannibal musical fan project.
Oh, really?
I still haven't watched
it. But they're doing a new one, I think.
Oh,
they just stopped filming.
Ooh.
Yeah, because they got a Kickstarter for it. They just completed filming and I don't know when it's going to be out. Because I haven't really been following Hannibal stuff lately, but we'll have to see and check in on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they filmed all over Europe.
Wow.
Yeah.
I am out of it. I mean, I've been trying to get on a Tumblr and, like, look at stuff and reblog and boost people's projects, but... which reminds me, I backed an enamel pin project.
Oh,
yeah, it's Canadian.
Cool.
And so I was like, I got a twofer and I was like, Jen, one's for you. What do you want? She's like, when to go? I'm like, when to go?
When to go? You know. But yeah, so I just thought, oh, this will be a great musical. And then when he's sitting there at the piano composing, or I'm sorry, at the harpsichord composing the song, I also thought about Brian Fuller saying that Hannibal's theme song in his mind is Being Alive from Company. Which is a song. Have you ever seen Company?
No, I've seen.
You should see Company. Because you like Sondheim.
Mm-hmm.
So you should definitely see Company. And so I had that song going through my head the entire time I was watching this episode. Because it's totally Hannibal's theme song.
So what you're saying is that season 4 needs to have a musical episode.
I don't know about that, but this is,
you know, first get on season 4, then get on a musical episode. Maybe it should be like a made-for-TV movie. That would be great.
Yeah, that would be great.
So this whole thing when right at the beginning, Jack and Will, and they're talking about Matthew Brown and... You know, Jack's like, oh, well, he killed the judge and the bailiff. And he's like, oh, he killed the bailiff, but he did not kill the judge. I started singing, I shot the sheriff. Well, I did not shoot the deputy. And then that was stuck in my head.
I hadn't watched a Hannibal episode in a while, because the last one was for the last time we recorded. Mm-hmm. And so I turned this on, and I think one of the first lines is Will in his cage as Jack walks in, and he says something ridiculous like, "You carry your concern like a full cup full of whatever." I'm like, "Oh, Jesus Christ. Really?"
It does get really, like, all of a sudden it's very, like, contemptuous, like, pissed off, like, I mean, it's really, like, Dark Will is, like,
there. Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm salty and angry at everybody, and fuck you.
And you're all dense and stupid, and I'm stuck in here, and does anybody not realize what's happening? Can you get with the program?
Yeah, I mean, he does a really good job of eye-rolling without eye-rolling at everybody that talks to him in this episode.
Just like emanates off of him like waves. But I did notice that they had that line in there, that it just happened line. And I was like, oh, reflecting to the Hannibal's eye just happened. Yeah. I did have the note that he's so disdainful. It's like his brain is working so much faster than everybody else's, and they're just not picking up on what's going on.
Yeah.
And I was trying to at least keep this in mind this time, that Jack's dealing with a whole world of other shit going on.
Yes.
But it's the, like, you really need to start putting this stuff together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Will says, like, who does he have to kill for you to believe what's going on?
Yeah.
I'm like, yep, Will, I'm right there with you.
There you go. And then there's Lana, as I said, looking like a bunny in the crosshairs. Blink, 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 blink. Look at my blue eyes. I did notice with this that Hannibal's outfit in this scene is still very him, but kind of casual, like the
casual,
fabric.
Casual Hannibal.
And I was like, ooh, is he trying to like pull a little Will influence in to appeal to Alana? Because he knows.
Well, I still love and definitely go by the theory put out in that list of what Hannibal wore in every episode, that when he does not have a tie on, he is absolutely up to no good. Mm-hmm. Like, that's when you really got to watch out for Hannibal, when he's not wearing a tie.
Yeah. Yeah, because later he's in his pajamas again. Mm-hmm. And
he's like plotting through this one.
Yeah.
More than anything.
I don't know. I can't remember if he has a tie on during the dinner party.
He has an ascot.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was like, because he's wearing like a velvet coat. You don't wear a tie with a velvet coat. You wear an ascot.
He's rolling on an ascot and a velvet jacket.
You know, there's probably velvet slippers involved too.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah, like driving slippers.
I forgot they wore an ascot.
Of course he wore a fucking ascot. In their talk in the kitchen, this is just the like, ugh. Hannibal being the fucking worst, and he's talking about having nightmares. Uh-huh. I was like, but it's like he enjoys it. He's like, oh, this is a new sensation. Like, these are new things for me to experience. Nobody's, you know, even if he's even having nightmares or not, but like having that whole, and just that whole act he's doing for Alana. Mm-hmm. I'm like, girl, you really.
He definitely is playing like the soft boyfriend role for her.
Well, and I say, I think he's also like very much enjoying this whole new idea of Will, like this like, as much as he's like, oh no, I just can't be his friend anymore, whatever, and he's like, you can tell in his brain he's like relishing it. He's like, this is fantastic. And I love it. I almost died, but I've never felt more alive. Then we get to our murder of the week. I guess we haven't really had a standalone murder of a week. They've all been in more, like, heavier service to the plot.
Well,
the bailiff and the judge were very...
bees. Yeah, before there was, like, the bees was the bees murder of the week.
It has been a little bit while.
Yeah.
I take particular delight that it was a Baltimore City Council person. I volunteered at a Baltimore City Council person race year and a half ago because I like to... imagine in my brain that the one killed was the person who was our former council person of our area, which was the reason I was working on a new campaign. But yeah, our our council can be a... I wouldn't be surprised if somebody pulled something like this. They've pulled other crappy shit. It's gotten a little bit better. So yeah, when I saw that card, I was like...
And that is the Baltimore City seal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well, they did a little bit of research. Mm-hmm.
Good job, guys. I tried half-assedly looking up the flowers in the body. I don't think what they have in the pictures is, or what they use, the actual flowers, are necessarily what he's saying.
Really?
Possibly? Oh. I don't know. The one that was ragwort, I thought looked was supposed to look completely different.
Unless it was a different
species. Maybe. I sort of fell down on my research this time. It was kind of late last night. I didn't want to say, I didn't like how, I mean, this is one of those, you know, huge suspension of disbelief. He moved an entire guy with a tree in a parking lot.
But, and grew the, like, tree into him and
grafted into him.
Well, I said later in the lab, like they're like, he stood in water for 48 to 72 hours. I'm like, did nobody notice this guy was missing? No, because he's a Baltimore City Council person. We're like, see ya.
He doesn't live in Baltimore.
Yeah, he doesn't live in Baltimore.
Nobody noticed.
I know, nobody noticed.
But yeah, it's definitely a suspension of disbelief. But it's one of the more beautiful murder tableaus out there.
I didn't like the... I kept fixating on the flowers because I don't think they did a very good job with the flowers. Mm. Like, they just looked very, like, bunches of flowers stuffed into... Like, we went to Michael's and stuffed this.
Oh my God, really?
I didn't like how they looked. I'm just picky.
Yeah.
Shoot, my brain just stopped. Okay. I got distracted. I looked at my Funko Pop sitting over there on the shelf and watching over.
So, so the murder tree was bought, I believe, by someone in Portland or Seattle.
It's like a tattoo shop.
And it lives at a tattoo shop now. Mm-hmm. So you can go visit it.
What, you didn't do that when you were in Portland?
I forgot to. No.
I'll have to go back. Next, it's the Will and Abel conversation.
I love this. I love this because you can totally see Will's empathy thing coming through and how he talks more like Gideon. Mm. He's much more like fast and loose and using words that Gideon would use. Uh-huh. It's totally different than how he was like earlier on in the,
where he's very slow and deliberate.
Yeah.
Will's like, we're being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying stuff to make Gideon say stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then the way Gideon is saying it and the volume, I was like, this is all... I mean, it's so all for Chilton because he's practically screaming it at the ceiling. He's like, so... I was in Hannibal's dining room.
Hannibal's house.
His cobalt blue
wall of herbs. Yeah, but Chilton's just like... Oh my God, this is amazing.
It's like Chilton porn.
Yeah. They're really performing for Chilton. It's funny.
Sorry, that just reminded me for some reason I know the reason. In the season one of Legion, when he's like in the... There's David's sister and the other guy are like back to back in their weird cells when they're like captured by the... Whatever Black Ops people, I still need to watch season two. I'm sorry. I did have a question for myself, I guess, is how is it that Chilton, how and why is it Chilton who's the one who actually believes Will? Like, Chilton's all in. He's like, it's Hannibal. That's great. Like, I accept this.
Will's been working on him, but probably he hates Hannibal. Mm. So he loves the idea because he loves the idea of, like, his biggest professional
nemesis
being caught for this and behind bars. Because I'm sure he dreams about it as, you know, Hannibal in a horrible prison situation. Not as it ends up, where Hannibal's still publishing works from prison about how horrible Chilton is. No,
he's imagining Hannibal, like, shamed and forgotten.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, all his power taken away.
Yeah, and that really didn't happen.
No.
But
no. this is more Hannibal playing the harpsichord, plink, plonk, plonk.
Composing.
He's totally singing Being Alive.
We have to listen to that song today.
Maybe we need to pull a clip for our music.
Yeah, we'll pull a clip.
And then they're in the lab, and it was, I think I just had to work on Jimmy Brace's son of a bitch.
It's like, about the songbirds?
Yes.
Son of a bitch.
And I was like, they really, such a, like, it was such a great detail, because you're like, oh, this guy, like, who is a minor character in the show, and could really be just comic relief. We're like, oh, well, I mean, we know he has a drinking problem that his friends are concerned about. Mm-hmm. We know that he loves animals. He loves bees.
He loves spiders. Animals more than people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, here's all these little things where you're like, that they just drop in there, yeah, that manages to, yeah, you know. I'm like, this is why we love all the characters, and we'll get to meet them.
Yay!
In, is it October or November? I can't remember.
Amy, it's October. It's my birthday weekend. It's coming up soon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm waiting for...
I know.
The tour date.
So we can buy
Fest.
Airplane tickets.
So we can get tickets. I also forgot Brooke's going with us. We backed the Kickstarter.
We
so
probably
long ago.
Should talk about that whole belly dance thing that we promised everybody.
Oh, shit.
It'll happen.
Something will happen. We may not want it to happen, but it will be there. But yeah, we're super excited that all of Sassy Science is going to be there.
Yeah,
I just saw that Hetan and Aaron were working together on something else.
Oh, cool.
And be creepy to each other on Instagram. It was very cute.
That's funny.
But yes, I'm excited.
Yay!
Anyway, that was where I had my comment about nobody noticing a council person being gone. Because it's not like they ever show up for work anyway. Sorry.
Nope.
And then... Alana and Jack in that walk in the woods,
mm-hmm,
which I would just like, I was watching it, you know, it's summer, the air conditioner cranked. Yeah. I'm sitting on my couch and I'm like, please get to fall right now. Alana's talking about Will and saying, or actually I can't remember if it's Alana or Jack saying that Will is not scared. And I just like how so much what they're saying was could be applicable to Hannibal. Like,
right. Well, I mean, yeah, everything Alana's saying is actually about Hannibal, but because she's, you know,
dense.
Well,
she's fixated.
She's getting a little something from Hannibal.
Oh, so yeah. Well, they haven't gotten to the something
oh,
yet.
Oh, that's right. Not yeah. yet.
Well,
soon. She's like, I believe everything he says.
And then Hannibal shows up to talk to Will. I'm like, why are you even here? I kept the breakup. He's there to break up. He's like, yeah. I can't see you anymore because you hurt me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to read my notes.
No, this is such a classic Hannibal and Will fight. As soon as I saw it,
fine.
Like, oh,
fine.
I mean, I've read this in so many. Yeah, like, fine. You hurt me, fine. Well, you hurt me.
Yeah.
Fine, you like it. Well, if you hadn't done that thing, then this wouldn't have happened. It's really all your fault, Will.
It's so passive aggressive for somebody who's so aggressive. I was saying that Hannibal throws the Alana Bloom gauntlet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because this is the one where it's like, that does irritate me a little bit because, like, Will knows Hannibal killed Bev. And Hannibal knows Will knows.
Uh-huh.
But it's like saying something about Alana. I mean, admittedly, she's still alive, so he's dangling a living person in mm-hmm. front of him. But when he's like, well, you know, it could be Alana next. And, you know, that's like the, well, now we're going to do something about it.
Well, I think it's also like, I'm sleeping with Alana.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though, like, yeah, it hasn't happened yet.
Where it's coming.
But he's definitely like, yeah. Got Alana now, so mm-hmm.
you can't do anything because you're stuck in here.
Whatever, Will.
And she thinks you're whatever she thinks of him.
I thought the part right before they have the conversation when he's in the cell and the stag horns are coming out and they're branching out
through the cage,
yeah, was really cool because it kind of visually showed what Will's doing, which is like stepping into Hannibal's dark side on purpose. So on purpose, he's growing these horns, just like the Wendigo, to like sort of shamanically, you know, associate himself with that. And
well, and the last time I think there was the ones that came through his back or whatever, and it was like a painful, traumatic thing.
Yeah, and this is totally different. This is like very on purpose. I'm gonna step into this role. I'm gonna step into the role of the Wendigo, and from there I can control some of the stuff happening outside of this.
Yeah. I also liked, you can see the difference between like those antlers are, they're different. Like they're much more natural in a way. Like they're much closer to an actual deer antlers, though, you know, so much more of them.
Yeah.
Than like that sort of skeletal.
Yeah, they're almost like a web of tree branches. In fact, it would look like a tree if it wasn't just so symmetrical and right and left. So there's like a web, like a reaching out in the web kind of feeling as well, which is what Will's
putting
doing.
All his tendrils out.
Yeah, putting all his tendrils out because he can't physically go anywhere, but mentally he's got superpowers. So, yeah.
Will's mental superpowers. He does. For some reason, the expression you just made reminded me. I don't think I retweeted it. I was going to retweet and tag you. Somebody did a side, it's like a side-by-side picture of season one and season three, like all groomed Will. And I was going to retweet it, tag you, because I know you love the super groomed, like in control.
Evil Will. Yes.
Well, yeah. I like the kind of just post out of jail, like dark, disheveled season two.
Oh, yeah. That's good too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's still a little like, fuck. Maybe in like the horse episode. So like,
which is coming up, right?
Yes.
I'm so excited because it's one of my favorite episodes.
I want to say it's ever, like eight, ever. I don't know. Ever. He's going to get out of jail soon.
The horse episode is a really good Will look because he's got his scarf game is on point.
Doesn't he have his collar popped?
Collar popped, scarf like wrapped perfectly.
And
like
righteous conviction.
And righteous like conviction.
Burning out of his pores.
Boom, boom, boom. Just tick off all the boxes. Yeah. Yes.
Girl scarf, righteous so conviction.
I'm excited for that episode. But yay. Okay.
So we've got Abel being an asshole. I'm like, really? I mean, I know he's crazy, but I'm like, what is he trying to achieve? Like, it's like a death wish almost at this point.
I think so, too. There was just an article, I think it was a couple months ago, that was written about Hannibal, specifically Eddie Izzard's performance in it. And this person was saying how they really liked Hannibal, but they really hated Eddie Izzard in the role. They thought it, like, took the whole thing to this whole theatrical level where it didn't need to go. And all the, and I completely disagreed with it. But, I mean, it's an interesting take on it. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't think you're getting Hannibal. Like, never talked about the whole that Eddie Izzard is doing this movie, other version of Hannibal. So, I don't know. But I'll find the article.
I know, he's like a mirror.
Yeah. I completely disagree.
Did they just find it to be, like, too affected?
Yeah. They said it completely took them out of the story to have Eddie Izzard be so over the top.
And wait, what?
I was like, which actually caused me to come up with my grand unified theory of Hannibal fandom, which is you've got to be some flavor of the rainbow to love Hannibal. And if you're so far over on the Kinsey scale that you are like the straightest person in the world, just don't even watch Hannibal. That's my theory.
Because you're just not going to, you're not going to understand it.
You're just not, the camp, the beauty.
It's just not going to speak to
your soul. The pain, the love. Yeah, you're just not going to get it. Just don't even try.
You need to, can you actually write that up so we can like, that would be a good Tumblr post. You need to write that up so we can get it out to people.
Okay.
I mean, no, I can get behind that, or at least like a, yeah, like a, even if it's not like, even if it's more, I'm trying to think of the way to describe this, like a queer personality, even if it's not like a queer sexuality, like you have to just.
You have to be some flavor of the rainbow. And that's fine.
And now I'm also thinking, like, Skittles.
If y'all disagree with me, come at me.
Taste the Hannibal Rainbow.
We have a phone number. Yeah. Prove me wrong.
I know. Come yell at Jen. You'll be our first caller. I would like to... I stepped out of the story at this point when they are, you know, he taunts Jack.
Mm-hmm.
He acts like idiot. He's pissing off Chilton. Mm-hmm. And then there's the whole scene with the orderlies taking him back. And I was like, I find it problematic that we have two black men beating white man in this. Though in a sense, it is realistic because you will find if you look, that is usually who would be employed in this sort of situation. Though I do know, I noticed in some other that they had like an Asian orderly, an Asian male orderly, and white men. But it was a little like, oh, that's kind of...
Yeah, it's a bad choice.
Yeah, that was a bad choice.
Yeah.
I was like, So think about that for season four, please. And then we're into the dinner party. And I'm like, why do I not get to go to dinner parties like this? People start inviting me to them.
Fabulous, doesn't it? And it's like crowded with like amazing, elegant people. And
yeah, I did actually before when there was all the food prep scenes. I was like, one thing I love about this is that juxtaposition of the jaunty music and all the food prep and the flipping through and the finding the cards and the pulling them out and. And I'm like, dude, you know, it's like the happy duckling Hannibal.
Yep.
Super pleased.
Yeah, he's so pleased.
I know. But yeah, I liked the use of the sort of Escher-like floor tiles for his living reception parlor.
Yeah.
That sort of maze.
Yeah.
Look to it. And I had looked up, I was checking something on Janice's blog and... Her sort of gleeful little comment about greedy extras who would eat the hors d'oeuvres and then have to eat exactly the same thing for every single take. She was like, it's always easier than doing a set table scene where you have to keep track of what people do to their plates for continuity. And she's like, here, people would eat something and then they'd reset the trays. And for every take, they'd have to eat the same amount again. And she's like, people who ate too much to start. Regretted it later, which I think those they're squab feet, not chicken feet.
Oh, the one that Chilton lifts up and looks at like, what the fuck is this?
I think she said you're supposed to hold it by the foot like a skewer and eat. It's a fig and a fig Newton. So that was definitely more for the visual than the actual taste.
His face when he holds
it.
Little chicken foot is the funniest shit ever.
It's all like, here.
This is a really campy episode.
It is.
Mostly because it's a lot of Chilton and a lot of Gideon, and they just bring the camp.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, Hannibal doesn't like because, I mean, Hannibal's campy, but he doesn't think he is. Like, I don't think he appreciates that sort of obviousness.
Yeah. But his whole sitting at the harpsichord composing a song about his grief and loss.
But that's private, John.
It's just ridiculous. Come on, Hannibal.
That's super private. And they talk about he's having a dinner party. Was it just like a cocktail? It seems really fancy for just a cocktail party. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely not a dinner because his dinner parties are sit down.
Right.
Maybe I noticed this is the one where there's the Christmas tree covered in antlers in the background when Jack shows up. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's like a pre-holiday
cocktail party.
Yeah. I know. I would like to go for the food and the over-the-topness, but I would not like to go for the conversation because you know it's fucking boring.
Yeah.
You know those people are so boring. Mm-hmm. I did have the little headcanon. I'm like, oh, look, the musicians must be Peabody students.
Totally.
Peabody is a music school in Baltimore, and a lot of the people who go there, they're in different ensembles and groups, and they will they will play at events. And so, I mean, we have a friend who's a Peabody student, and that's what she does. She teaches and she plays, you know, she's for hire as a cellist. Hi, Sam. But yeah, so I had that little, like, you know, those are some like starving Peabody students who were like, ah, at least maybe I'll get a plate of food in the kitchen when I'm done. It actually reminds me, did you ever go to Louis?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Louis was a bookstore cafe in Baltimore that closed in the early 2000s, I think. Mm-hmm. And you would go in and they had a, it was in a beautiful old building, commercial row house. And you'd go in and there was, it primarily had a lot of art books, mm-hmm. culture, stuff like that in the front of the building. And then in the back, it was a two-level cafe.
Yeah. And it was open bar. Late.
Open really late.
It's open really late. You get pots of tea.
First place I ever ate hummus.
Wow.
And because
they
it was
put the, up a plaque.
It was the 90s. And you know, it was known for being super artsy.
Yeah.
And for the terrible service, because it was entirely staffed by like art school kids and punk rock kids and mm-hmm. stuff who did not care.
Yep.
Except my boyfriend worked there for a while. You know, I knew everybody, so it was great.
I'm hoping when Red Emma's opens up again that it'll be more like that, because mm-hmm. I know they're going to have more food and they're going to have a bar now. Mm-hmm. And so
Red Emma's is an anarchist collective bookstore and cafe. Are they completely vegan?
That, yeah, well, that is a problem.
Or vegetarian?
I think they're vegan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if they did dairy.
Maybe they do.
Local dairy.
They do. Eggs. Yeah, because I got a coffee with cream in it. Real so milk, they do dairy. Yeah.
But some pretty good falafel.
Yeah.
But they have events and they are moving to a new space that is going to get. Red Emma started out as a tiny bookstore. And then it became a slightly bigger bookstore. And then it became a cafe yeah. and a big space. And now they're moving to a newer, bigger space. And
it's going to have a bar.
Pretty awesome. Maybe wish them success. sorry, I would like to talk about food. Oh, and the place, the bookstore cafe, they would always have, you know, there'd always be some trio of Peabody students
playing,
you know, with a tip bucket out or whatever. It was an institution. I miss it.
Mm-hmm.
I need those casual hangout spaces. Not that I leave my house ever. And I'm like, Jack, you are so not smooth. It's like, no, don't make me a plate. Just bring me a takeout container.
This was like the rudest thing ever. I couldn't believe it.
No, like Hannibal's not even hiding it. He's like, you are currently being appalling.
The funniest thing I thought about this scene was that Hannibal's face, is he actually worried or is he looking worried? Because he knows he's got nothing to worry about because all of the meat is not people.
I think he's projecting two things. First off, his being completely appalled at Jack's lack of manners.
Right.
And I think he's trying to look freaked out in order mm-hmm. to bolster Jack's conviction that yeah. he's on the right trail.
Because I mean, it was some over the top emoting for Hannibal.
Yeah, his eyes are like poof, like huge, like oh no,
somebody's about to find me out.
And then, you know, a lot of comes up, and she's, you know, like, it's funny they're playing this little like these roles, you know, she's obviously sort of like his proxy mm-hmm. hostess, mm-hmm. like, you know, the yeah. lady of the house kind yeah. of role. And she's all like, oh, you know, she's offended for Hannibal. And I'm like, Alana, what the fuck are you doing? Get over it. I did make a point that Hannibal has some fancy ass to go containers.
Right.
I was like, I want that Snapchat.
Here's this amazing Pyrex thing with four snaps on it that you can take to the FBI. I'm like, okay, Hannibal,
take that.
It was like a half-washed Chinese food takeout container.
If I was like, put it in some foil, here you go. That would be my house. And then we have Hannibal and Alana.
Yeah.
I was like, my note was that even Hannibal being funny is creepy
mm-hmm.
with the chopsticks thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I had forgotten this, and that Alana is the one who makes the first move.
Yes.
So in that sense, I'm like, I mean, if you think nothing's wrong, I sort of admired her for, like, going for it.
Go, Alana.
After they talk about Will, right? They talk about Will. No, that's... No, they talk about Will, and then they talk about Will, I think, after in bed or something.
Yeah, I'm sure that it's their favorite topic of conversation for the both of them.
I talk about anything.
It's not like Bedelia, who's like, oh my God, really?
But I had a note here to myself is, was this a coin toss moment? Like, if Alana hadn't made the first move, would Hannibal have done it? He's obviously laid the groundwork.
I think he was being sort of a siren the entire time and, you know, expected this to happen. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
But it was,
I'm going to go in.
But I was really wondering, like, if he was like, okay, like the difference if she initiated it or he initiated it. And it made me wonder.
If he initiated, she might have been like,
no,
how could I?
You can't. You're my mentor and my teacher and my colleague.
Who initiated the Will Alana kiss back in season one? Wasn't it Will?
I think it was Will.
Yeah.
Because Alana's just the fucking worst about it. She's all like, I like you, but I can't separate you from your issues.
You're a mess.
I'm like, have you met human beings, Alana? We all have issues.
Well, and it's interesting because in a way, you know, this whole wooing of Alana from Hannibal, I mean, Hannibal's like, I am the perfect man. I have this perfect life with this. I throw these amazing parties. I'm sad. I need comfort. You know, I mean, it's like the perfect trap for her.
Yeah.
Like, I speak your language. We're in the same profession.
We've both been through trauma.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I don't blame Alana.
No. I would have been like, yes. Do it. So the bed scene, he gets up, he wipes off the glass.
Right.
And obviously he drugged whatever she was drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to, like, why did he wipe the glass off? Because he didn't empty it. He didn't clear it of any traces of whatever he gave her, unless it was something that was just dipped in the rim and not in her drawer.
I don't know.
For some reason, that, like, really struck me as weird this time.
Yeah.
I also had an appreciation of when he gets out of bed. I'm like, Hannibal dad bod.
Yeah. He looks good in a pair of pajamas.
Yeah. He looks sure real good in a pair of pajamas. I mean, he would look better without them, but you take what you can get on regular TV. And then when Hannibal goes to Abel in the hospital, I was like, to me, that's one of those, like, the TV show doesn't actually, for me, do horror very often. And to me, that is a horror scene.
Yes.
Like, the lighting.
Yeah.
That anticipation of what is outside. You know, Abel's total I am so fucked face.
Yeah.
Is that the same hospital room they use for Mason later?
It looks like
I think it, because there's got that, like, curved wall to the side.
Yeah, with those, it totally looks like it.
Those lights. I'm like, what is this fabulous hospital that they keep putting people in?
The mood lighting.
I know.
Incredible hospital.
Incredible mood lighting. And for some reason, it was also a, like, to me, that is a very Mads moment and not a super Hannibal moment when he pulls the pulls the mask down. He's too, like, bright-eyed about it and, like, excited. It's not Hannibal right here. And then back in the bedroom where I said Hannibal is sleeping the sleep of a job well done. Oh, and that's, I think, when they're talking about funeral sex and...
Yeah.
Bill and
he's like, well, it's not just funeral sex.
I know.
It's so much more.
Yes. And the census taker line. Yeah. Comedy gold.
That was really good.
Is that the same sweater and pants?
I touched that sweater.
I know. Is that a Cable sweater?
Yes.
I think he wears I think it's the same red sweater.
Yeah, it's the red sweater pajama set.
From the breakfast.
Yes. So. I can tell you that is very, it's a very fine, tiny Cable, and it's cashmere. It's like the nicest cashmere I've ever petted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very soft.
Bentley. Bring it to Fannibal Fest, please.
She's thinking about it.
You should be, people should only be allowed to, like, touch it after they've, like, showered or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it will degrade. I know somebody went to school for.
Yeah, cashmere does not.
Oh. I mean, it'll hold up well, but any fiber stuff, you have to, you know, Well, I have a friend who went to school for textile stuff, and then our friend Nora does more paper conservation, but whenever anybody talks about, like, keeping photos or stuff, sometimes Nora's like, no!
Well, we waited. We took all that stuff out and touched it before the salsa and chips came out.
That is so smart.
So, at least there was that.
Yes. No restraint. Sorry, I'm trying to. As I watch the episode, my notes just get real incoherent. Yeah.
So Jack was like, wah, wah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where were you last night?
I was here. Like, he was with me.
And I mean, that's like peak boyfriend shirt wearing right there.
Yeah. She looks pretty adorable.
I mean, of all the, there was a bathrobe right there, Alana. No, there was bathrobe. Then we're back to, the leg preparation scene again, jaunty music. And that's why I was so happy that I had that link about the guy and his friends eating his foot, because it was so appropriate to this episode.
This is a beautiful dish, by the way. This is something that I would like to make.
The clay wrapped.
Yeah. Just the layers to it and all the fruit inside and then the bacon or whatever is put over it.
Oh, yeah. It's wrapped in.
It just looks gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should make that for the Mizumuno episode instead of lamb.
Okay. We could have like lamb pops on the side.
Ooh. I mean, you could probably do it. Well, is there any part of a lamb that's like that? That could be.
I don't know if there's the leg of lamb, but I don't know if it would translate to something that. We'll have to research it.
Yeah. Oh, no. I have to think about food some more. this is the scene with the damn slippery life.
Which is not, so this is the first time that line comes up, hard to have it, hard to hold on to it, damn slippery life, but from Red Dragon, but it also comes up when Will's wife says it in the hospital. They reuse it twice.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll have to go watch that and, compare the two of them.
Yeah, she's in the hospital and Will goes to see her. And I don't know if she says the whole thing, but she definitely says the end part of it.
It's definitely in the book.
Yeah, it comes from the book. And I know there was somebody in one of the, it might have been Hugh Dancy, said at one point they had to kind of stop Brian and be like, you already used this line.
It's obviously one that he really likes.
He's pulling so much dialogue from Red Dragon. But that definitely comes up twice.
Sometimes
in the series. Which I think is fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you have really good source material, why not use it? It reminds me a lot of Velvet Goldmine. If you... so much of Velvet Goldmine's pulled from Oscar Wilde. There's chunks of it that are pulled from Angela Bowie's biography of David Bowie.
Which I've never read.
There's parts. I mean, it's a kind of a hot mess, but it's still like entertaining.
Like her.
It's a hot mess, but still entertaining.
Yeah.
I admire people who can take stuff and recontextualize it. And rework it and how it changes in different people's mouths and all that. So I don't mind it that much. And I'm like, if you've got good stuff to work with.
No, I mean, I think it's kind of cool. And when I heard him say those lines in this episode and then realized, Molly's saying them as well. It's like, oh, that's a really different, it's a really interesting association. And like where the characters are when they're saying those things, at like what point in their lives. Like, I like it.
Does she say it at the point when after... The Red Dragon spin.
Yeah, she's in the hospital.
She's in the hospital. And it's that, like, Will is still pretending like he's going to come back and she's realizing that.
He's sitting there holding her hand.
Yeah. And she's like, this is not going to work, dude. Because it's kind of like Abel saying it from sort of inside the machine of, like, he knows. I think it's. Is it hard to have it harder to keep it? I should have written the whole thing down. But like he knows how easy it is to take it away.
Yeah.
And you know, Molly's sort of saying that, like, knows, like, she's just seen how fast you can lose things.
Yeah.
And also, like, that sort of resignation of like letting, you have to like things slip away, literally.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to watch that. Good call, Jen. Good analyzing. Pardon me for a moment. I have to read my notes because I have a chunk here.
Okay.
Okay. So Abel, I actually can't remember if Abel or Hannibal says this, but talking about getting to know the Chesapeake Ripper. Yeah, I said getting to know the Chesapeake Ripper. So I was like, I like the double meaning where it's like he gets to know him, not really even though like through what he does, mm-hmm. but by doing something he literally does. Like he knows the Chesapeake Ripper because he is eating, eating people and knows he's doing it, mm-hmm. as opposed to everybody else who is sort of put into that position unknowingly.
Mm.
And so in a way, like, he could never be him, but he's getting a little closer in a sense. Like,
right.
And even if it's unwillingly,
right,
like, he's got that extra step. And I mean, I don't really feel that bad for Abel, but there was the part of me that was like, this is kind of fascinating. Wouldn't you be fascinated to be in a position to do this?
Yeah. Well, and then we get to see later on in season three the flashbacks to their dinner scenes and that there was more than just this one that we saw, and there was more interaction between the two of them, which I thought was really interesting. I think Abel Gideon like wants to be the Chesapeake Ripper so badly, and I think there's a little disappointment for him in who it turns out to be. Like, really? This guy who's not really enjoying it and can't relax around it and have the same sort of, you know, joie de vivre that I do about the whole thing. You know, he seems pained and in love with this Will guy that he never shuts up about. They're a strange couple.
I was going to say they're straight. It's something strange afoot at the Circle K. Is that the quote, Justin?
Yes.
Is that happening, by the way? Is there a new one happening?
No hesitation. Sudden desire to watch those movies. For me, this is a scene of Hannibal with, like, as much of his mask off as possible. Like, he's so delighted.
Yeah.
He's so, I don't think before this he's ever gotten to just, like, be who he is.
I also noticed on the dinner table, there's this great, I believe it's a melon, and the whole top part, the rind is sliced off, and the top part's kind of carved like a brain.
Oh.
Yeah, which is definitely a thing to,
from the movie,
where, you know, he's eating the brain.
Because I haven't watched the movie, but just reading that scene in the book was so horrifying. And the scene in season three when they ice pick the guy, and he's still aware of what's going on.
Yeah, because he hits like just the right part.
Oh, that's like my like. That's hard for me. Like that stuff or something. Like Abel deserves it. But. Like, particularly brain stuff, like that thing where people's brains are impacted, but they're still kind of aware of what's going on, I find fucking horrific.
It is horrific.
Yeah,
so. It is. Yeah, it's actually a question I want to ask Janice now that I noticed it on the table, because I'm guessing that it's a scene so much like that one, except they're eating his legs instead of the brain, that they might have switched that up so they could save the brain part for when they do it with Will Graham.
Yeah.
So I wonder if she just put that on the table as kind of like a nod to
what's coming later.
Yeah, what's coming later. Yeah.
We'll get to ask her.
Yay!
Then they're going to find to save Miriam Lass. I would like to point out Somerville, Virginia, real place. There's really, it's pretty rural, and there's apparently only one building with an actual address. Like, not an address, but like one commercial building.
I'll believe it.
It's like a mixed, like, general store / like post office.
Yep. Sounds right.
But it's 2 miles from Quantico.
Oh.
And I love the fact that they're like, she was right fucking here the whole time.
Little special lab is 2 miles from Quantico.
Yeah, that Somerville, is Virginia.
Fabulous, Hannibal. Two way miles to go.
I had to look it up.
Way to troll the FBI.
And one of the edges of one of the border edges is Dumfries.
Oh,
yeah. So. Yeah, I had to look it up. You know what it looks like? Kind of like what they used. Was that the same barn that they used for the Angel Maker?
I don't think so, no. Okay.
When they come through the door, like it felt like the same.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it to me. But I know the barn they used in the Angel Maker is on the property that
is
Will Graham's house is on.
Hopefully we get to see it.
Hopefully we get to see it.
The whole way that this last scene was laid out, mm-hmm. Hannibal composing,
mm-hmm.
Jack by himself.
Right.
Which is really weird. I like how it's super dramatic. There's something incredibly important happening, but it isn't like played, again, like a horror movie. It's mm-hmm. not like, dun, 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 what's going to happen? It's mm-hmm. not that kind of tension. It's just like how everything's drawn out, him opening the quote-unquote wrong well, for all that is like paced out so well. And the two scenes of like happy Hannibal, like da da da, and that were really, really great. So
yeah,
I liked the ending.
They find her in the well and he goes dun,
yeah. Just, and it just, yeah, and the fact that it just ends,
my song is complete.
Ta-da! And it's no like, I like the fact that she's like, you know, she's not like screaming or crying or anything like that. Siri, you know,
yeah,
her down at the well
just
is
like, what?
Did they say later, was she kept there or did he kept her? I figured it was implied he kept her at the cliff house and then.
Yeah, I think he kept her at the cliff house because he was doing all sorts of crazy hypnosis brain stuff on her.
He wouldn't want to do it in a cold,
dank
barn in the middle.
Do it somewhere nice. North. With a wine cellar.
Yeah. Particularly because I guess it's implied that the cliff house is up closer to like Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
that area. Mm-hmm. You're not going to drive down to Quantico. I mean, you do it for Will, but you're not going to do it to talk to a girl in a well. That's asking too much.
Too much.
So yeah, and that was the episode. And it was a good one.
Yeah. Just could have used some more music.
Just thinking about Monty Python. I just want to sing.
Just want to sing.
I guess it's. I guess I feel like I say this about a lot of the episodes right now, that they really are taking them and ending them in points where like they are continually like really important.
Yeah, the stakes are getting higher and higher now.
Yeah,
right.
Nothing feels like wasted,
mm-hmm.
which I think sometimes in the earlier episodes it felt like this could have been put here and this could have been put here. We didn't really need XYZ.
Right.
But the this, it's like everything's so intertwined.
Yes, because we're going towards the big finale.
There was on Tumblr, somebody who just got into Hannibal was like, I just finished the season one finale, and I can't believe it, I'm dead. And people are like, oh, no, you're not. You can't be dead because you got 2 more coming.
Strap in.
Yeah. Be prepared. I know.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
I'm like, oh, to see that for the first time again.
Yeah.
Be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
My poor little heart probably couldn't take it.
Mm-mm.
Tip, do you have any recommendations?
I do have one for a new podcast that just started, mm-hmm. From Gods and Radicals, mm-hmm. called Empires Crumble. I think their first episode is just out. So they are pagan anarchists and have a great blog and do some classes, and they just started a podcast. So I don't agree with everything they say, but I really do like what they have to say, and have found a lot of their articles to be challenging in a good way around.
I know I've read some of the stuff through the
website and all.
So they have a podcast.
Awesome.
Empires Crumble.
This actually isn't a recommendation, and I just, we were talking about beforehand and it popped back into my head. There's a new Hannibal podcast called Ethical Butchers. Justin listened to a little, but Jen and I haven't had time. But if you're looking for more Hannibal podcast content, you might want to check them out. I think they have two episodes out.
Yeah, I think they have two.
And I think they're coming at it from, they like the show, but they're not really in the fandom.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I haven't listened to it yet. I know. I have to see.
I'll have to do it. I'll have to stop listening to all of the K-pop podcasts I've been listening to. That's my recommendation this week. I decided to just give myself over. So I have not shelved my Hannibal love. It's just merely simmering on the back burner. But I found a really cool podcast called, Ask Me About K-Pop. And I really like it because it's two friends and they're sort of talking about the whole industry and what they love. And, it's very much, I think, the same dynamic. Like, they have a lot of fun. There's a lot of laughing. Occasionally, you can tell somebody is flinging themselves around in a chair, which I always respect. Yeah, it's just been a lot of fun. I've been listening to a lot of K-pop. I just gave up. I was like, fine.
Would it be a podcast you could listen to if you don't know a lot about K-pop?
Yes, because it's totally set up like they're talking about the industry and they give recommendations, music recommendations. And then they do a thing where they created a spreadsheet of all of the K-pop bands between that debuted between, I think, 1992 and currently. And they pick a random number. And at the end of the episode, they give a little like brief synopsis of that actor band. And then they watch their most watched video on YouTube and talk about it. And some of them they've heard of and some they've never heard of. And some they're like, this was great or this wasn't great or what's going on or I can see why they failed or, so I really like them. And I actually have been listening to another one called Nuna You Business, which are two women who watch K-dramas and are into K-pop. Nuna is a term for a, used by men for a slightly older woman.
In what way?
Like, you're in high school and you have a crush on your sister's friend and they're a couple years old, you know, the friend's a couple years older than you. There was a drama I watched this spring, which was really great until it wasn't, called Pretty Nuna Who Buys Me Food. And it's a romance and the guy, I mean, I think they're supposed to be like 30 and like 38. The woman's older. So yeah, it's like a,
but you know. 30 is totally old enough to buy your own food.
Yeah, but you know, somebody might, but the lady you like might be buying you dinner.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remain suspicious of this concept.
And I think they might have also called themselves this because they're in their 30s and the, particularly K-pop fandom trends young. But they just like talk about what they love. They do really weird little games like what, you know, name all of this band's members if they were Subway sandwiches. And it's the same thing, like you could tell there's cackling times. And so I really enjoy listening to stuff where people are obviously enjoying, like we were saying right before we started, when, or maybe after we started, to hear people be not just examining the thing but also to be fans of the thing.
Right.
And to be really like enjoying it. And
yeah, I like that stuff.
Yeah. So I would recommend both of those if you're looking for other things. There was something else that popped into my head. I can't remember. I'm just thinking about these people laughing a lot. I'm like, yeah. Like, I really like that. I've been listening to a lot of that stuff instead of my other podcast that I should be checking out. I'm only in the car so much. I took a car trip 2 weekends ago and I 16 hours over you know, over the weekend, which was great. It was me by myself in a car with podcast and music, and except for the fact that 2 days later my back started to act up. I was like this was fantastic.
That sounds lovely.
So yeah, I think that's it. So you can visit us at headfulofhannibal.com
Head Full of Hannibal on Tumblr and Instagram, and Head Full of Hanny on Twitter. You can come yell at Jen at 302-404-HEAD, or you can ask questions or leave comments, or, you know, yell about something you love being a fan about.
Do it.
We'd be happy to engage. Or you can message us or email us or whatever. Yeah, so I think that's it.
For don't today. Go in the murder basement, Amy.
No, don't go, Jen, because we have to go out and eat delicious queso fundido and drink margaritas. And Justin has a show to do.
Yes.
So thank you, everyone. And we will talk to you soon. Bye.